Start meeting until 12 o'clock. Okay, let's continue. I want to just go back to the sugya of 100 kailites. I have a sefer at home. This is a sefer. It's called Oz Yashir. I don't know the mechaber. Meir is always mocking the mechaber. He's not here. Who's the mechaber? I don't know who the mechaber is, but it's a very good sefer. Very, very chashuv sefer called Oz Yashir. A lot of machshav on Jews. So there he has a chapter on why we blow 100 kailites. And he just presents information very well. So the most simple reason is because of the mother of Sisera. The Gemara says the mother of Sisera. But Rosh Hashanah is called the Yom Teruah. It's called the Yom Teruah, which the Targum translates as being a Yom Yababa, which does not help us very much. We need to then go to a pasuk in Shoftim where the word Yababa is found in reference to the mother of Sisera crying over her son. So we discussed the cry of a mother. There is no cry like the cry of a mother. No one cares about you like a mother. Yosai, I want to mention this idea. Yosai, I used to think when I was a child, you know, that in America, the whole thing with this thing that it says in the Torah, Yosom v'almana, doesn't exist anymore in America. Baruch Hashem in America, you know, we have all of these benefits and all these things, no child left behind. What a foolish thing to think that. I mean, of course, some of the yosam, obviously, the tsar, your father, or mother, the pashan, I'm oid. But a person, like, you know, let's say a person is an established person, he's already an adult, a mature adult, he has a parnasa, he's established. You can't call.
In one of those days.
Every other second. You can't call the person a yosam. It's not true. Because a yosam doesn't necessarily mean if you're homeless, you're on the train, you're homeless. The taich of yosam means you have no advocate. You don't have, I think in this world, you don't, not even a protection. I wouldn't even say that. You can be protected, you can be sheltered, you can have a trust fund, you can have billions of dollars. It's a matter that no one really cares about you. A person has a parent, even if you're not on good terms with your parents, subconsciously, they're your fan. A parent is your fan. Like Facebook, you have a fan. All the fans on Facebook are all fake. Okay? they don't mean anything anyway. But in life, you need a fan. You need a person.
No one has your back.
No one got your back. It's even not your back. It's just someone is rooting for. I think that's the best thing. You don't have in life someone who's rooting for you. People are very nice, oh, how are you, and everything is fine and good, but the only one in life who is rooting for you, soccer mom, is parents, a mother and a father. A mother and a father are your fans. They're there, and they're rooting for you. When you score a home run, they have nachas. No one else really cares. Everyone is polite, yeah, you're nice, good, everything's fine, it's wonderful. But when push comes to shove, they're not rooting for you. That's how it is. When a person, a young person, does not have someone that's rooting for him, that's a very big tragedy. Okay, when a person gets older, kachi darka shaloylam, okay, it's very hard. You know, you have someone who's 60 years old and has parents, the parents have real nachas. They have real nachas when he accomplishes something. And then Rachman Islan, when a person loses his parent when he's 60, 70 years old, there's no one rooting for him. Okay, he can deal with it. He can deal with it because he's already a mature person. But a young person who loses his fans, that's a very painful thing. The cry of a mother is something that is very unique. It's very, very powerful. And we go to Ein Sisra to indicate that when we cry to Hashem, there has to be that depth and similar to the cry of a mother. Okay, that's one insight. Now, here's the big, very big question. The big question is, the mother of Sisera was no tzaddikal.
No.
Okay? Yavin, Sisera was... Yavin, I don't know, but make believe he was a Hitler. I don't know the details. Who exactly was Yavin? Yav Rachmanis on Hitler's mother? Yav Rachmanis on her? Yav Rachmanis on her? By the way, a Jew saved Hitler. You know, there's a whole story. When Hitler was an infant... He was almost killed, and a Jew came along and saved Hitler's life. Okay, a Jew is a whole. You have to Google this. Is a story. What happened? Very interesting story. A lot did for us, right? A lot of Hakaras HaTayif. A lot of Hakaras HaTayif did for us. But We have a Rachmanis on the mother of Haman. Rachmanis on the mother of Hitler. Yimach Shemo v'zichra. We don't have a Rachmanis on her. Let her cry. Gesundheit, let her cry all she wants. So we had to go to the mother of Sisera. My high. Okay, so there are two answers. There are really more than two. There are many answers. Here are some of the answers. Answer number one is Enechanami. We are not learning from the mother of Sisera. All we're learning from the mother of Sisera is the cry of a mother. That's it. Now, mother of Sisera we could not care less about, but there's another mother that is very relevant, another cry of a mother that is very relevant to Rosh Hashanah. And who is that?
Sarah.
How did Sarah die? What is the Kriya Satira of Rosh Hashanah? The Akedah. The theme of Musaf. It's repeated 100 times in Musaf. You can't ignore it. You can't get away from it. The whole Rosh Hashanah, Eloi Shel Yitzchak, the Shofar, the Nusach HaTfilah, from beginning to end, is all built on the Zuchos of Akedas Yitzchak. What happened to Sarah? How did Sarah relate to Akedas Yitzchak? Well, Sarah was not present. And then when Sarah found out in the beginning of Chayisara, the Satan came to her and said to her, also the Satan, you see over here, the Satan is a very prominent member of Rosh Hashanah. He comes to the, he's a very prominent person in Rosh Hashanah, a very prominent thing, the Satan. Well, the Satan came to Sarah after the Akedah, and she said to Sarah, you know what happened? That, you know, your husband, Avram, he took your son Yitzchak and he offered him as a sacrifice. But he was just about, he almost died, but he did, but not quite. And Sarah, she cried, and parcha nishmasa. And that cry caused her to die. So the question is, what was she crying? There's a lot of Torah on this. What was she crying out of tsar, out of happiness, out of whatever? That's a whole different discussion. The point, only thing we need to notice, Sarah cried in reaction to hearing a report about the Akedah. That her son Yitzchak was offered on the Mizbeach. He was almost offered as a sacrifice. That whole experience, that whole image caused her to cry. What the cry was is a very complicated discussion. That is who we are connecting with on Rosh Hashanah. We are not connecting with the cry of the mother of Sisera. We're connecting with the cry of Sarah. We're only going to the mother of Sisera to learn that there's something called the cry of a mother. Once we know there's a cry of a mother, we have to go to the next step and focus, being that the entire theme of the Shoshana is the Akedah. Who better to focus on than the mother, the emotion of Sarah, who cried over the Akedah? It is to her cry that we connect on Rosh Hashanah. That's one answer. Another answer goes as follows. When Yitzchak gave the brachos to Yaakov, and then suddenly Esav appears, and Esav learns that Yaakov stole the brachos, Esav cried. He cried. Yardu demos. How many tears came out of his cheek? Two tears. And Chazal tell us that because of those two tears, Esav was able to destroy, he didn't destroy the first one, but because of those two tears, the two Bate Mikdashos were destroyed. Those two tears, the koyach of a tear was so powerful, Esav harasha, Esav the jealousy, the tsar, the anger, his tears, how does this work, I don't know, but his tsar had significance in heaven, and that opened up the path that the two Bate Mikdashos could be destroyed. The Chazal go on to say, he was about to cry a third tear, and had a third tear descended from his eyes on his cheeks, then there would be no hope for us. Then we would not be able to build the third Beis HaMikdash. It's only because whatever happened, HaKadosh Baruch Hu prevented that third tear from coming down, we have the Bayis Shlishi. The Bayis Shlishi can still be rebuilt. So what do we learn from this? That when our enemies cry, they cry, and how this works, I don't know. It's a koyach, there's a power of kitroik against us. They have emotion, they have pain. Their pain is not a simple pain. It's not just the pain of, it's a spiritual pain. You have to say it's a spiritual pain of jealousy. They also wish they could be spiritual people, and they see in us what they could have been for them. Whatever, I don't know, you have to finesse it, understand what this means. Therefore, just take this idea a step further. When the mother of Sisera cried, that was a kitroik. Her tears, her 100 tears, not now, in this interpretation, it's not 100, it's 99 tears. We have a tradition, she cried 100 times. Not necessarily, she cried 99 times, according to this understanding. She cried 99 times. 99 sobs. Her pain was, her tsar was to destroy Klal Yisrael. She had tsar that she was unable, that her son was unable to succeed in conquering Klal Yisrael. Her tears were equivalent to the tears of Esav. Those tears are a very powerful kitroi. They serve as a very powerful accusation against Klal Yisrael. Just like the two tears of Esav served as a power to cause harm to Klal Yisrael, likewise the tears of the mother of Sisera were tears which opened up a kitroig against Klal Yisrael. How many tears did she cry? 99. What do we do on Rosh Hashanah? We blow 100 koilas. Because we do one more to counteract the mother of Sisera. We're not blowing 100 koilas to sympathize with the mother of Sisera. We have no rachmanis on the mother of Sisera. Like the average person, the mother of Sisera cried. How nice. The cry of a mother. So therefore, we're also going to cry. Just happens to be she cried for no good reason, and we're crying for a good reason. That's a very simplistic approach. A much deeper approach is, Aim Sisera, she cried, I want to kill them. She wasn't crying over the loss of her son. She was crying, look what they did to my son. I want to destroy these Jews. I'm going to obliterate them. I'm going to plan to obliterate the Jews. Her cry, tears were tears of kitroi. On Rosh Hashanah, we have to counteract her sobs. How? By going doing more. She cried 99, we cry 100. The tekiah gedoila. What's the 100? The 100 is the tekiah gedoila. The cry number 100 is what overpowers the 99 of the mother of Sisera. This is much better than those of the minhag. We only do one tekiah gedoila. There are different minhagim as to how many tekiah gedoilas you do. Most of us do at least two. You do a tekiah gedoila before Shemona Esrei. Right? The tekiah before Shemona Esrei, after the first 30 koilas. Some do three, in fact. They do a tekiah before Shemona Esrei, a tekiah gedoila during Chazaras Hashatz, and then they do a tekiah gedoila at the very, very end. That's not the only minig. Probably the more correct minig is to only do one tekiah gedoila. You do 30 koilas, there's no tekiah until the very, very end. Why? Because it's that kol 100 which now finally overweighs, counteracts the 99 of the mother of Sisera, who cried not out of sympathy for her son, but cried out of a desire to take revenge, to destroy Klal Yisrael. We counteract with 100 koilos, especially the Kiyah Gedoila. That's the moment of truth. That's the climax. That's the moment when we succeed, we overpower her. That is one. Now there's another whole different reason why we blow 100 koilos. It's based on a medrash. A medrash in Vayikra, I think it's probably Parashas Tazria, Isha ki seleid v'yol v'zachar. What does the medrash say? The medrash says that when a woman is on her birth, on the birth stool, okay, this was before the days of the epidurals, before the days of all the modern techniques and modern medicine, it was very painful. They say there's no greater pain in life than kidney stones and childbirth. Okay? Childbirth is the pits. It's the worst of today, Baruch Hashem. They have techniques, their medicine, their epidural, whatever it is, they all have different things to take away. Yoga, all different classes, they have all different techniques today to take away the tsar of Leda. But traditionally, it's a curse. The etzef tel dibanim. Tsar chevle Leda, and the experts tell us the real tsar chevle Leda is just unbearable. At the kach, a woman, when she's giving birth, she makes a shavua subconsciously. She will never, ever again live with her husband because she might become pregnant. And she'll have to go through this all over again. At kedei kach, that's how painful it is. A woman would have such a thought in her mind with a shavua, an oath, never to have marital relations again with her husband. It should not come lidei kach. So it goes to show the real deal of what chelit leder really is all about. So a woman, she cries, she sobs. How many times does she sob when she's during her tzar? 99 times. And then she gives out when the baby finally comes out, that last moment, that's 100. She cries 100. The 100 is l'chayim. Now, the first time, the medrash really says that the first time the pain is so great, she actually believes she's going to die. She has a sudden, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to survive this. I'm going to die. So the first 99 cries are cries where I really think I'm going to die. I'm sobbing. And then when the baby finally comes out, that cry 100 is, ah, it's over. The baby came out, it's a cry, l'chaim, for life. That's what it says in the Medrash. 99 are l'maves, suffic maves, and 100 is l'chaim. On Rosh Hashanah, now I wonder if they do, they can make, do studies. I mean, I don't know, I have no idea. A woman in natural childbirth, a woman, how many, I don't know, the whole system of labor, how long it takes. I'm sure there are millions, there are studies. How many, what is it called? The contractions. I'm sure there are studies that they have, probably they can put it in numbers for you of the average period of time of labor. Some labor is 10 minutes, and some will be in labor for 24 hours, right? How many contractions are there? Some are very few, some are a lot. I don't know how this thing works, but there are statistics, and they can tell you an average for a healthy woman. What are the statistics? It seems like Chazal also knew their statistics, and in their time, maybe in the Shtana HaTeva, but in their time, it seems that their statistics told them that a woman who is in labor, she has 100 sensations of pain. Okay, go back to ancient times, 100 sensations of pain, which caused her to give out a cry. 99 are Lamades, and one is L'chaim. On Rosh Hashanah, we find ourselves in that situation, especially taking into consideration the idea that says this in the Sefer Oz Yashir, he says there, because Hayoim Haras Oilam. What does it mean, Haras? Conception. Conception, or Haras, pregnancy, not even that sure. Pregnancy, conception. The whole world is described in terms of a woman who's pregnant. A woman who's pregnant. Elit Siyoin Ve'orech Kamo Isha. Isha vitzireha. You know, when you blow the shofar, blowing the shofar alludes that Rav Sadia Gaon is the coming of Mashiach. It's the coming of Mashiach. Before the coming of Mashiach is the Tsar Chevlei Leda. So when you blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, that you're blowing the shofar for who? For the woman who is in labor. Because the Chevlei Leda leads into Elitzia Neviyadecha Kamo Isha vitzireha. We're in the Chevle Leida, and the Shofar is the arrival of Mashiach. It's the birth. Hayoim Haras Olam. It is the Isha Vitzirecha. The blowing of the Shofar is life. So the first 99 Kolos, what are we really doing on Rosh Hashanah? Mi Yichye Mi Yamos. We're like the woman who's in labor. We identify with the woman in labor. It's a mamish 50-50. We don't know what's going to be. We're in a lot of pain. We're really worried. We don't know what's going to be. It's a suffix hashakel, 50-50. Mi yichye mi yamos. And then we get to the tekiya gedoyla. Ah, we survived. We have simcha. We are confident that we have gone, like the isha that's yoshev, Allah hamishaber, call 100 has taken us out. L'chayim tovim u'l'shalem. Okay, now, let me just tell you, I want to talk about the makri, but it's very late, so I'll tell you some other things, and we'll do the makri. I have some very, very beautiful things from Rav Yosheb Soloveitchik and Rav Herschel Schachter about the makri, the purpose of the one who calls out to Kiyo. We're going to leave that in the for Monday, but let me tell you a few more little nice things. In the meantime, we have a few more minutes. Okay, let me tell you at least a halachic issue. Okay, a few short little things. If a person wakes up, not, let's say you go to a Vesikin minyan, and you blow shofar 6:30 in the morning. You blow shofar, and you blow in your basement, or you have a minyan in your living room. And when you blow shofar, you wake up your neighbors next door. Next door, they have neighbors, and they're sleeping. They go to the 9 o'clock minyan, or they have little children, and you have a minyan in your living room, and you blow shofar, you're blowing 100 kolos, and guess what? You woke up the next door neighbor. You woke up your neighbors out in the street because you decided to blow shofar 6:30 in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. Uyu yoytze tkiya shofar, when it came about through waking up, disturbing someone else. Someone else, the Bo Shofar, disturbs them. Are you mekayim the mitzvah? So it's not so simple. They used to do this talk a whole din Torah a couple of years ago in Borough Park, one of the wedding halls. They go until 3 o'clock in the morning every single night, and the music is blaring away, mitzvah tans, every single night, and there are people who live on the block, and they need to get some sleep. Let's talk about the noise. Okay, the noise is going on every single night, and they took him to a din Torah. There were a few cases like this already in Borough Park. It was on the news, to a din Torah. And they had to make a pshara. The end was they had to do. They didn't give him 100%, but basically there has to be some type of solution to this problem. So this is an old child, and he quotes a place that says Yitaka disturbs someone in the middle of the night by having a mitzvah tans 3 o'clock in the morning, and when you keep the music is blaring away, when you come to the sheva brachas, you cannot make the bracha shehasimcha b'moinai. The bracha levatala. If you're causing someone else sorrow, you can't make that bracha. So the mechaber of the Gemil Rabinowitz, he says that when you blow shofar, if your blowing of the shofar is causing someone else disturbance, if you're doing it 6 o'clock in the morning, you ring up your neighbors, you should know you're not necessarily being yetzi the mitzvah. It's not a way to make kind of mitzvah. Quickly. That's right. You're right. You're 100% right. It's not so simple. Just because you're going around from room to room blowing shofar, and there are some very sick people who need some sleep and are very disturbed, Rachmana Litzlan, that's right. Who gives you a right? Who gives you a right to go blow shofar and disturb people who are very sick? That's right. Palmim shebitula zehu kiyuma. That's right. That's right. That's a chelal shem. You're absolutely, all the Paiskim advise. They all advise on paper. Do not daven in your seat. Don't go to the back and daven, don't daven. And all, you know what happens? You know, it's not so bad. You know, I can go to the back. I see no one really minds. So people, they're more ahead there. But it's always a disaster. It's always a disaster. And all the places across the board will tell you, you should not go and daven in the back by the bathroom. Shacharis, mincha, marv, it's not a good idea. Sit in your seat. Daven shvon eshris while you're sitting down. And don't disturb. And don't make a chil Hashem. And don't make it uncomfortable for other people. In very exceptional circumstances where the plane is half empty, and you're really, really sure that you're not bothering anyone, so then maybe you have situations where you can do it. But generally speaking, it's not a good thing. You're absolutely correct. Okay, let's go to another quick idea. Mice in the Baal Shem, I like this mice. This mice for some reason resonates with me, the mice of Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov, he selected one of his members of the Kehillah to be the Baal Tokeah. And this member was very honored, very B'Tam Chacham, and he studied all the Kavanos. He took out all the Sefer Kabbalah, and he studied all of the Kavanos. When you say Tekiah, you're having these Shemais, all Yoni Kabbalah. And he had all down pat, and right before Tekiah, as was dominated by Hasidim, before Tekiah, you go to the Mikvah. So they got up to the tekiah. So the Baal Tokeah, he ran to mikvah. While he ran to mikvah, the Baal Shem Tov went over to his seat, and he stole. He took away all the kavanas. The person had his notes, all the kavanas. He said tekiah, mechavin, all of these things. He took it away. The guy comes back from mikvah. Where are my notes? Where's my guide? Where's my guide? It's gone. The Baal Shem says, listen, get the show on the road. People are waiting. Just blow, no kavanas. So the person, he blew taco with no kavanah. So the Baal Shem then said to him, I'm the ganav. I took away your kavanas, here they are. And I did it on purpose. Why did you do it on purpose? So the Baal Shem said to him, let me explain to you. The kavanas are gvaldik. All these kavanas are gvaldik. The kavanas are like keys. You ever see the maintenance men in all the buildings, in the yeshivas, all the institutions? They have mamish, they walk around, you can, like you can hear them like from a mile away. A mile away you can hear them jingling, the keys are jingling wherever they go, they carry with them a key to every door in the building. Every key only opens up one door. Only one door. There is no master key. Okay, I'm all, you have a master, open 10 doors, but you're not going to have a master key that's going to open up all the doors, so you have to have a whole ring of keys. The kavanos are like keys. This kavan opens up this door. This kavan opens up this Pesach. This Kavanah opens up, this Pesach in Shemayim, the Baal Shem Tov says, but there's a master key. The master key is a lev nishbar, a broken heart. A broken heart, a humble heart, a humble heart is the master key. All the Kavanahs are keys. The very tak are very good. You know all the Kavanahs, you can know what, but you need on Rosh Hashanah the master key. Open up everything. And that's not the tzetlach, that is the lev nishbar, v'nidke elokim loy sevaza. Can I tell you another quick vart before we wind down? What happens is this interesting shaila, we know that we daven shmone esrei, there's no answer to this question, but we know we daven shmone esrei, if you sneeze in the middle of shmone esrei, it's a good semen. And if achmon litzlan, the sound comes out from the other part of the tube, hamevin yavin, it's not a good simen, right? It says this. It's called itush. It's itush lamalo, itush lamata. The GI tract starts in the mouth and ends off somewhere else. So there can be a sound that comes out either lamalo, the mouth and the nose, or it can be lamata. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, it says the Gemam Shulchan Aruch, if you sneeze during in the middle of Shemone Esrei, it's a simen yofe. If Rachman Litzlan, there's a sound from the other end of the GI tract, it's a simen ra. Now, of course, this means when a person is completely healthy and there's no reason why it should have happened. A person comes in with a person wants to be a big shot in Shul, I sneeze during Shemone Esrei, they like me, and he brings in some salts and some powders, and he forces himself to sneeze, that's ridiculous. Person has a cold, you have a cold, and you sneeze, meaningless. Sinuses, person, allergies, nonsense. But a person has a stomach condition, it's also meaningless. It means when the person is healthy, everything is fine and good, and just a freak thing. It's a freak thing that he happened to sneeze, so then we say, oh, hashgacha pratis simen toif. What happens if the Baal Tokea sneezes in the middle of the Tekiyos? Do we apply that same principle? Okay, do we apply that same principle to Simen Toiv? Or the other way around, it's a Simen Ra? Interesting idea. So the Poiskim are divided. They're divided on this matter because Shail is the Baal Tokea. Is the Baal Tokea. What happened? Does he act as a shlech tzibur as a tefila? Is the blowing of the shofar in the category of tefila, or is the blowing of the shofar in the category of a mitzvah? It's the mitzvah's hayayim. How far do we say that when we blow shofar we're praying? Al derech drush we like to say that it's the purest form of tefila. The cry of the mother of Sisera. Is it begeder tefila mamish? Or no? It's the mitzvah's hayoim, and it's a bakosha, but it's not halachically tefila. That'll be nafkamina. Nafkamina will be your frame of mind. Do you have to, you know, the altokeya unfortunately gives out a bad sound, so the maki will say, Abaisai, it's a bad sign. Vasim Barat, right? It's a bad sign. Limra Musar. Everyone learn Musar. We're in a lot. Hashem has given us a bad sign. It changes your frame of mind. Or let's say the Baal Tokea sneezes. Oh, so we were going to learn Musar for 10 minutes, but we don't need to anymore because we should be besimcha. It's a good sign. It's Nogea. How should it affect your frame of mind if such a thing were to happen in the middle of Tekiya Shofar? What status do we view the blowing of the shofar? Is it tefila at kedei kach or is it not tefila? Okay, interesting. I thought there's something different off the beaten track. You're not going to see this in other svarim. I come to the Lord, 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 I
Hello.